She was warned.
She was given an explanation. Still, she persisted. Let it be noted today that I quoted United States Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in a sermon. Now, people who are socialized female in our culture recognized all too easily what happened last week when the senators from one party voted to silence a senator from the other party. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren was attempting to read into the record a letter from Coretta Scott King written in the 1980s regarding the man who is now Senator Jeff Sessions, or was then, fitness to be appointed to a lifetime position as a federal judge. Mrs. King asserted that Sessions was too racist to fill that position in a way that would be fair to all people. Jeff Sessions, you may remember, was nominated by our current president and subsequently approved for the job of Attorney General of the United States. Now, the words of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s widow could certainly be considered important enough to be added to the debate on the floor of the U.S. Senate, particularly in light of what it took to be too racist in the 1980s. But this was more than about stopping uncomfortable words from being spoken into the congressional record. This was about exerting power. This was about flexing muscle, sending a message that uppity behavior would not be tolerated, particularly by women members of the minority party in such an august body. After Warren was formally censured and barred from speaking again, no fewer than four of her male colleagues read the exact same letter from Mrs. King into the record. None of them were opposed, silenced, or harassed in any way. Last week, as happens in the 21st century, I started an interesting conversation on Facebook. The question I posed: can virtue exist on its own, or is it defined by its relationship to sin? The ensuing discussion got a little hung up on sin, so I changed it to vice. And it was fascinating. Some argued that virtue could exist on its own. Others say it could not, except in relationship to something other than itself. One friend suggested that virtue could exist on its own, and others' reaction to it would place a value judgment on that virtue that has wholly no effect on whether the act was virtuous or not. In other words, virtue exists in the one who exhibits the virtue, regardless of how someone else may interpret that. I think the best answer was that virtue can exist on its own, but we lack the language to describe it without using words of comparison. For example, it is always cold, at least for now, at the South Pole. That's what it does, that's its job. But unless you've been somewhere else, you have no way to describe it other than the weather. Now, this month's theme has been grace. So can grace exist on its own? Or, like hope, must it exist in response to something else? Grace is defined, in my mind, by the presence of difficulty. We can say that a ballerina or a gymnast is graceful, but in doing so, we infer that they are graceful in comparison to the less graceful way the rest of the world moves. We can say that Elizabeth Warren had grace and dignity in the way she handled herself during her censure, but that grace is defined by the ungraceful way those around her were behaving. We can say that Michelle Obama set a new standard of grace for her 8 years in the White House as First Lady. Under constant scrutiny and criticism, she never rose to the bait, never responded in anger, never lashed out, no matter how vicious or petty the attacks. So persistence cannot exist without resistance. Otherwise, it is merely continuing. If you walk around the block 3 times and decide to go around a fourth, and there are no other factors at play, that is continuing. If, however, you walk around the block 3 times and are tired and your leg hurts because you've had knee surgery, and you decide to walk around once more, then that is persistence. Okay? There are factors at play that are exerting pressure for you to stop. Therefore, you must persist in order to achieve the goal of 4 times around. Now, persistence and grace come in many forms. We have the model of Aisha Evans being arrested in Baton Rouge uprising that occurred last summer after the extrajudicial police execution of Alton Sterling. This image of the young woman standing with tall, graceful dignity as militarized police rush to arrest her is likely to be an iconic image of this decade. We have the model of Rosa Parks, who persisted in remaining seated on a Montgomery bus, and the example of Senator Elizabeth Warren, who persisted in reading pertinent information into the congressional record despite efforts to silence her. Now, there are times when persistence is merely a way to get from point A to point B, and there are times when persistence is more than that. It is a moral act of courage and defiance. It can be an act of spiritual resistance to an immoral, even evil, force that seeks to do harm. Protesters who lay down in front of bulldozers or hang banners from cranes or tie themselves to trees, those are all people engaged in moral persistence, moral resistance. They are engaged in spirit-centered acts of justice. Persistence like that is indeed a spiritual practice. It is an expression of grace. And we do not need to tie ourselves to ancient redwoods or lie down in front of a bulldozer in order to participate in this kind of spiritual engagement with our world. The political scene in America is scary for many of us. We are in a time when people are drawing sharp, dark lines of enmity. Families and workplaces are divided by politics and sometimes religion. We spend a lot of time concerned about the other. For some, the other means immigrants and Muslims, and for some, the other means conservative Christians and people on the right. To persist in love in times like these is a spiritual practice of grace. It is challenging, but rooting ourselves in love is the way we will survive the months and years ahead. In his book, A Hidden Wholeness, Parker Palmer writes, "There was a time when farmers on the Great Plains, at the first sign of a blizzard, would run a rope from the back door out to the barn. They all knew stories of people who had wandered off and been frozen to death, having lost sight of home in a whiteout, while still in their own backyards. Today we live in a blizzard of another sort. It swirls around us as economic injustice, ecological ruin, physical and spiritual violence, and their inevitable outcome, war. It swirls within us as fear and frenzy, greed and deceit, and indifference to the suffering of others. We all know stories of people who have wandered off into this madness and been separated from their own souls, losing their moral bearings and even their mortal lives." We Unitarian Universalists are the people who answer the call of love. We are the people who show up with our yellow t-shirts that proclaim our mission as promoters of love. We are rooted in love, and we are capable of demonstrating grace, even in times of tragedy and trauma. Arianna Huffington recently wrote in her blog, "We need to go back to the truth that helped the country recover after 9/11. If we are consumed by fear, the terrorists win. If we live in a perpetual state of outrage, Trump wins. Because when we become depleted and exhausted and sapped of our energy, we're not as resourceful, creative, or effective. The goal of any true resistance is to affect outcomes, not just to vent. And the only way to affect outcomes and thrive in our lives is to find the eye in the hurricane and act from that place of inner strength. It's the centered place Archimedes described when he said, 'Give me a place to stand and I shall move the world.' It's the place from which I imagine Judge James Robart issued his historic order to reverse Trump's executive order on refugees. And it's the place from which Viktor Frankl, who lost his pregnant wife, parents, and brother in the Holocaust, and spent 3 years in concentration camps, could write, 'Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way every day, every hour, offered the opportunity to make a decision which determined whether you would or would not submit to those powers which threatened to rob you of your very self, your inner freedom.'" Now, some of you have heard me talk about the four priorities that churches always talk about, right? So many congregations list their goals for ministry: financial stability, more people, community outreach, and deep spiritual nourishment. And the thing I tell every single congregation I talk to is that you've got them backwards. First, you need to work on your deep spiritual nourishment, which will empower you to do the community outreach work that is your mission, which will attract new people, which will broaden your base of financial support. Langston Hughes wrote, saying, "Let down your bucket where you are." I will not presume to know specifically what he meant with those words, but when I hear them, what they say to me is that each of us has what we need around us with which to fill our buckets, to nourish our souls. Now, whether you get your spiritual nourishment from silent meditation or by singing with friends or sitting in this sanctuary in community on a Sunday morning, you're already engaged in that first step. You are filling yourself up with the grace that we are called to then share with the world. Our Unitarian Universalist principles draw us to a solid foundation based on the notion that everyone is worthy of God's love and mercy. Everyone deserves love. There are some who say that those who act in ways that hurt people are acting out of a place of deep woundedness, a place where they feel unloved. In those instances, it is still possible to engage with them in loving ways. So we've got a couple minutes here. What I'd like to do is I'd like to talk a little bit about how each of us is now engaging with this world in loving ways. What are we doing? What are you doing to engage in this world in loving ways? I'm trained in silence. I can wait. Show your kids love so they can be loving. That's wonderful. That's a good answer. Yeah, it's a wonderful model.
Bringing in personal items to give away.
Doing charity where giving. Okay, so helping others and treating them with dignity, right? Yes? Right, so volunteering to help animals who are beautiful, yes? Paying it. Right. Being present when people are sharing, yes. Yes, Ron.
Communicating with people all over the world, including giving money rather regularly to people in South Africa who are teaching Esperanto to orphans.
Okay, doing global work for justice and empowerment. Wonderful. Okay. All right. So supporting organizations, I presume financially, that do justice work for environmental justice and other kinds of justice.
Yes, including the UUA.
Including the UUA, always good. Always good. Including the First Unitarian Church of Alton, I should mention. Pledge season is coming. Yes? Incredibly important work, yes. Comforting women and children who are affected by domestic violence. Thank you. Okay. There's so much we can do, and there's so much we are doing. Give yourself some credit. Now, to mindfully, intentionally, lovingly engage with someone who is very different from you is a spiritual practice. That person may not be as different as you might first assume, but our fear, and this is a normal biological thing, our fear of the other too often prevents us from ever discovering the truth of our similarities. To mindfully, intentionally, lovingly engage with someone who means you harm is an act of resistance. Loving them does not mean we enable their hurtful behavior, but it leads us to a place where we persist and resist being drawn into the hate. Loving someone does not mean we don't speak the truth about them or to them, nor does it mean we accept unacceptable behavior. Ask any parent how that works. And some days, I cannot persist in that kind of love. Some days, the best I can do is trust that whatever God might exist in the universe is in charge of loving each person and be grateful that I am not God. Some days, really, that's the best I can do. I can trust that there is inherent worth and dignity in each person and be glad it's not my job to go find it. She was warned. She was given an explanation. Still, she persisted. If we can persist in love in days like these, we will be answering the call of our faith. We will be engaging in resistance. We will demonstrate grace. We will light the way for all the world to see. May this be our practice and our prayer. Blessed be and amen.